Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com. Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this AudioCast 24, my guest suggests that the answer to the clergy abuse scandal is to go full metal jacket on those priests and bishops. So just get ready to...
One, two, three,
listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, as we discuss once again the ongoing bitter dripping of negative news regarding the church's mishandling of the clergy sex abuse crisis. And it's really not even a crisis anymore. It's just criminal activity. And in full disclosure, my special guest, who you will hear, is going to choose to remain anonymous for various reasons. This was all recorded about a week prior to the bombshell report of Archbishop Vigano's account of Pope Francis allegedly knowing about Cardinal McCarrick, the formerly disgraced Cardinal McCarrick, that is, of the sex abuse scandal, and yet lifted a sanction that his predecessor, Pope Benedict, placed on Cardinal McCarrick. And so this just adds to the whole messed up nature on how to find solutions, and that's what the whole point of this particular show is going to be about. How do we find solutions to this ridiculously horrific, sinful, criminal activity in the church? Well, that's our appetizer and our amuse-bouche, and you're going to hear in the deeper dish discussion that this is not an easy thing to solve, but there is hope, and I'm going to talk about it in the carry-out order, but between now and then, you're going to have a chance to hear how my special guest would approach trying to find solutions to this horrific scandal and sinful crimes. When we return with more Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, we'll be back in just a moment. This episode of Shoot the Shiitake is brought to you by BrandFox. It's where e-commerce, fulfillment, and customer service come together. As a nonprofit ministry or small business, it's easy to lose focus on the mission and be caught up in the daunting task of commerce. At BrandFox, they believe in partnering with you to complete your commerce solution so you can focus on your mission, and they focus on the back end of the sales. And I know they work really well because I use them for all of my online e-commerce retail, my basically online store at fatherleofeeds.com. So if you're looking for scalable commerce solution, fulfillment, customer service, and site design, simply visit brandfoxllc.com. That is brandfoxllc.com. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep dish discussion with a man who I am calling Joseph because it is his confirmation name. I can't actually tell you his real name because I'm just going to let him tell you. Joseph, first of all, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And why can't we know who you are?
I work in D.C. and it's kind of a funny town to kind of express your opinion too harshly, and I'm probably going to do that tonight.
Okay. And also, more importantly, you work in agencies that are kind of familiar with scandal.
Scandal, sure.
And more importantly, you have been a faithful Catholic father and husband and observing the approach of the Catholic Church with the sex abuse crisis. And in full disclosure, I have known Joseph for almost 20 years, and probably even longer, to be honest with you.
I think so, yeah. Probably since about 95, 96.
God, I feel old. That's all there is to it. And we just literally reconnected because you are a listener to this show.
Yes.
You shot me an email. Can you tell me a little bit about the email and what it was that made you even want to write to me?
Sure. So, yeah, so we've known each other since, what, 96, we said? We reconnected, I think, probably went in May. Shortly after we saw each other, I listened to your podcast on this on the abuse scandals, and it's something, of course, every Catholic has been struggling with. And over the years, I've watched what's happened, and I've watched the church's response to them, and I've just been very dissatisfied with the response. And
well, so, you sounded more than dissatisfied in the email.
yeah, really.
I mean, like honestly, just tell me what you felt like. You don't have to just shoot it with me.
Yeah, outraged. Really, I've written the bishops in the past about what I felt, and I've written...
Have you gotten responses?
A couple of responses, really kind of just... The response I got was basically kind of put the onus on me to be forgiving more so than it was an institutional response, like, hey, look, we're jacked up, and we know it. We just got to sort ourselves out, and here's what we plan on doing about it.
So it was a response that wasn't satisfying what you were really questioning, and
right.
That was the bishop's handling of the sex abuse crisis.
Right. I think what every Catholic sees in these scandals is the two pieces of it, the abuse itself and how it's been handled. And I think most Catholics are, of course, shocked and disgusted by the abuse. But I think what's really upsetting to them is the response to the abuse.
What do you think that's the case? I mean, what do you think people are saying about the handling of it?
That the institution was put first and the victims were a very, very distant second in their priorities. It was more important to protect. And this is what really kills me. It felt like a really dumb calculation on the part of the church, because it felt like, you know, we all go as Catholics to Mass and we expect more out of the Catholic Church than we would any other organization we're
sure.
associated with or dedicate our lives to or put faith into. And so we expect an appropriate response, a response that is fitting and consistent with our faith.
What would have been your response? What would you like to have seen?
I would have liked to have seen the hierarchy say, we are now going to do what it takes to get rid of this, not just handle it as it comes to us. In other words,
drain the swamp
sort of thing. So for example,
okay,
you know, Pope Francis put out a letter today to the people of God about this scandal, right?
Sure.
To me, it was really kind of absurd because he's asking Catholics who are on their last leg to give more thought to Catholic theology. You know, he's talking about how we need to come together and have faith and all these things, which are all completely true. But he's asking Catholics, again, who are just kind of done hearing about this, to walk with him and pray about it and think about it, which is fine. But a lot of Catholics aren't there right now.
Where are they?
They're thinking, I don't want to hear about we cry together. And look, when I say all this, I was not a victim of abuse, so I can't speak on their behalf.
Sure.
It's important for me to say that. But I can say as a Catholic who has, I've listened to the stories that I can see, you know, I can read about. I've listened to interviews. Out of Pennsylvania, you can see a few of the abuse victims who have shared their story.
Sure.
We've all seen these kinds of stories and you can empathize. But as someone who hasn't had that experience, I can still be really angry about the whole thing. And I can say that Catholics want to hear Cardinal Sean O'Malley, for example, say, this is on me. I was supposed to have taken care of this and I didn't. This should have been taken care of 20 years ago.
So Cardinal Sean O'Malley's response was satisfying to you?
It was not.
It was not satisfying.
Neither his
to you.
Nor the Pope's. Because again, I think they're asking Catholics to come out and pray with them and come together as a team kind of thing.
Sure.
And pull together as Catholics.
Yeah.
We're dealing with families who've been destroyed.
Correct.
And the last thing they want to hear is
let's pray about it.
The Catholic Church telling them how they should be enhancing their spiritual life to deal with this.
So
they want to hear, this is on us. It's not going to happen again. It's the last damn time you're hearing about this stuff in the news, because I'm going to set up a team that's going to go from diocese to diocese, state by state, and route this out. And anyone who is a part of it or is part of the cover-up,
so
gone,
I guess
period.
The question that I, and believe me, I agree with you. So I'm just going to play devil's advocate,
sure.
because I think in the discussion,
when we're just kind of shooting it here, we're going to be able to get to a realistic understanding of the nature of the problem and a realistic understanding of how to handle it.
Right.
When you're going to say, root this out, what do you mean exactly by what is this?
Cases of abuse that have happened over the years, whether it's 50 or 70 years ago or last year, and clergy that have helped to make it not become public, and which has helped the Catholic Church not to bring consequences for that kind of behavior.
So when you say rooted out, though, we're going to talk about like priests who have abused, say, like in the 50s and the 60s, who are now dead.
And,
what do we do about that?
Sure. Anyone on record. So my understanding of this last investigation was that Department of Justice just looked into what was on file at the different
dioceses.
Right. So these are things that came to light because of that investigation versus things that the church brought out and said, this is what we found in our own investigation, and we're dealing with it, and we're taking these actions now.
So you would have preferred for the church to have come out and said,
sure, be proactive.
Be proactive and kind of air their dirty laundry.
Of course.
Okay.
Because the church has already lost credibility with Catholics.
Sure.
Plain and simple. Right?
Clearly.
So what do they have to gain by just hoping that this doesn't rear its ugly head in the future?
You're right. So I think just a more... if we were kind of summing it up here, you would like to see the bishops. And by the way, Joseph is, that's his confirmation name.
Correct.
He's saying this because he actually has experience in dealing with transparency issues on a bigger level than we can talk about. And I can't really say what he does or he'll have to kill me, basically. But you're speaking from an experience on how to deal with crisis management, transparency issues, and scandals of other sorts, but perhaps connected to sexual problems.
Sure.
So when we want to be transparent about our sexual misgivings, how easy is it for anyone, much less the church, which has a strict teaching on sexual appropriations, to come out and just say it? And would it be appropriate to be like, hey, by the way, everybody, 10 priests are accused of such and such, and we've kicked them out of the priesthood?
Right. So in the same way that a priest would ask a person to go to confession, you know, and
but a confession is secret.
What I was getting at is in the same way a priest would ask a Catholic to come to them and share their sins and confess, because it makes it real, it makes it easier. You're asking someone to hold you accountable, having that kind of accountability partner, so to speak.
Yeah,
the church could put that into practice as well. Ask for help from the outside. Hey, look, internally, we're too screwed up to make this work as an organization.
Yeah,
let's bring somebody else in that can help us hold ourselves accountable. I mean, organizations can do that all the time, whether it's a consultant, it's an outside investigator, whatever it may be.
I think dioceses have done that. They've gotten like independent lawyers to investigate such and such. You know,
and if that's the case, Catholics need to hear that. Catholics don't want to keep hearing how we cry with you every time this happens.
Yeah.
We get that, but...
oh, I'm sick of it too.
Show me something that you're trying harder than the rest of the world is trying.
And
to
I'm
going to
press
out.
You because... To become a priest today, in post-2002, which is when the John Jay Report first came out with the first set of scandals where the Dallas Charter kicked in. And by the way, at the church where the Dallas Charter was kind of created because there was such horrific abuse by a parish priest to these children, I was asked to give a mission there. So, I mean, like to give a talk there. I mean, and it was horrible. People there didn't even want to hear about it anymore. They were so sick and tired of it. And I think there's just a fresh wound that has opened up. And so for me to even become a volunteer at a church, they do a background check for everyone. I mean, they literally have to get fingerprinted and do a background check. Psychological reports, over 1,000 questions. It's the same one that the military uses for special operations.
So this is good for us to hear because I don't
know. And I'm not defending this.
And I don't know that we hear that enough. So let me ask you this then. What has changed, because I don't know, what has changed since 2002, which I think is, for me, that marked
it was disgusting
a real
time of the
tipping
year.
Point
yeah.
for a lot of Catholics.
It was a real tipping point. It was a time in the church when the bishops realized that they were very weak individuals, that when they were mishandling it, they were thinking that they were probably doing the best thing for people. All of them all together, because some families didn't want to have their name exposed to abuse, and so they didn't want to talk about it publicly. Thought it would be best for the priest, because, you know, like, he's still a priest.
Mm-hmm.
And once a priest, always a priest kind of mentality. Thirdly, to the best of their knowledge, there just wasn't science or psychological studies to kind of enforce child protections, because Like, when did child abuse even become an issue? Like, what year? Do you even know? I can't think of it, but I mean...
In like, what sense?
Like, when did child abuse become a horrific thing? Like, just on the news all the time?
Probably predated me, I'm sure. I don't know, 60s?
Yeah, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I mean, that's the whole point. Like, at what point did pedophilia become such a horrific crime?
Oh, well, that probably predates all of us. I mean, I don't...
Yes and no. Because, like, in some cultures, right, it's still kind of okay for a young girl to be wedded to an older man. And
yeah,
so, like,
it's still a twisted thing.
Like, oh, it's totally twisted. It's demonic. That's why I love it when St. Paul comes out harshly against, you know, raping children, you know, replacing girls with little boys. I mean, this was a biblical problem.
But yeah, so even the cultures where this was so-called accepted, you know, pederasty or whatever it may be,
yeah,
it was still recognized as...
horrible.
Yeah.
And evil.
Right.
And then, like, in the 60s and the 70s, where a lot of the sex abuse kind of flourished. Think about it. That was a time when there was the free love movement, where there was sex without responsibility, that there was just like sex without repercussions or consequences. I'm sure a lot of that creeped into the minds of the church and weak members.
So let's ask that. Do you feel like what's been coming out in the last several decades is a result of the church's poor recruiting of priests?
It's a lot of problems.
And, you know, say pre-John Paul II?
Yeah.
Post-Vatican II?
I don't know, to be honest with you.
They just got loose with their standards, and next thing you know...
No, because I think, like, to enter into seminary today, even when I entered into seminary, which was in the early 90s, yeah, I'm that old, people, leave me alone, but when I entered into seminary in the early 90s, there was a barrage of psychological testing. You know, if there was an orifice, there was a finger probing it to make sure that everything was healthy. Right. You know, I mean, and even just probing my mind too.
Right.
Asking all of these questions, which felt kind of intrusive. But I guess it would be no different in, for example, a position that you're in, Joseph. They had to do some serious background check for you. But does that mean that people can't sneak in?
It doesn't. But at the same time, organizations respond drastically different than what you see with the Catholic Church. Secular organizations, when they find something in their midst, they're not, well, I should separate that between probably for-profit and non-profit organizations. You'll see non-profit organizations, when they find something in their midst, they don't have a stock price to protect. So they are rabidly defending their culture, their integrity, and so forth. Now, a for-profit, they may find someone stealing secrets or something like that, and they may try and brush it under the carpet because they're trying to protect the stock price. The Catholic Church is acting like a secular organization, and
correct.
I even have argued with one of my bishops, look, I'll just go with you for a second. I'll just buy into the secular response here for a second. That still doesn't make sense to me.
You're right.
I feel like we're getting both a non-spiritual, non-Christian response out of these abuse, how it's being handled, and a really dumb secular response. Because just the back of the envelope type of math tells me that if you're just going to let this stuff pop up as it's found by law enforcement, you're going to lose a lot more money than you'd be if you'd be handling this yourself.
Sure.
And just kicking these folks out of here.
Yeah.
And you'd win a lot more favor and faithfulness from your parishioners, your customers.
Part
of
it.
The people who are a captive audience and who have massive cognitive bias to believe in you, right? And so we're throwing that away. And again, I'm just speaking as if I'm trying to make sense of this from a secular standpoint.
Sure.
As an organization, if you're going to handle it secularly, at least be smart about it. At least be a leading...
Yeah, so let me tell you, you know,
Put your MBAs to work. I know you got a few.
No, they don't. I mean, how many bishops have MBAs? How many bishops have had administrative schooling? I mean, a lot of our bishops, a lot, but not all.
But they
some literally went from...
But they've got access to PR firms.
Wait. You don't understand. A bishop is the supreme authority of the diocese. That's what I was talking about in my podcast, that you thought maybe the problem is bigger than just abuse of power. But it's totally abuse of power.
In the handling.
They are given the full reign of all of the matters with regards to the church and their local diocese. And therefore, what they say is supreme. And so you're going to find it. And let me tell you, with access to a lot of money and they hire a public firm, I mean, hey, do you think that that firm is going to be a negative profit to that bishop? Or say like, hey, bishop, you really got to do it this way. If not, you're really screwing this up. A lot of these companies are consulting. They're really just butt kissers.
Yeah, but so let's put this... Let's use this analogy. I'm a car company, and I find a defect in my car, and this seatbelt's not going to work, right?
Yep.
I got to do the math and figure out, is this defect going to kill more people than I have money. You know, what's the best bet here?
You're right.
Financially, right?
Yeah.
Well, I can do a recall on these pieces because we'll lose more money on that if we don't recall it.
And but that's, what exactly in this analogy, because I love it, we've got to fix the problem. And so the question is, what exactly is the problem? It's sexual misconduct with priests, or is it priests just unable to integrate sexuality because we're in an over-sexualized world? Is it,
well,
is it many things, including weak bishops who just need to resign immediately?
Yeah, so there's two pieces of it.
Okay.
Of course, one, the victims, right?
Okay.
And
that's just restitution.
Well, I'm just going to separate the stakeholders here. So you've got the victims and their families, and those people are isolated to most of us. We don't know a lot of the victims, and that's to the church's advantage for those who want to abuse people, right? Because they know that they can kind of isolate those people, and they probably do that by design. They find the kids that don't have two parents or whatever the case may be, and so it's easier for those predators to isolate those families, right?
Sure.
But for the rest of us, the scandal hits more people in how it's handled than those being actually victimized.
So you're talking about how the bishop, again, so the problem for you is how the bishops are specifically
handling. For me personally, because I wasn't a victim.
Yeah.
For me personally.
Yeah, I get it. No, I get it. I completely get it.
I'm outraged by how it's being handled.
So, but what is the, how do we find a solution? I mean, what is a bishop to do? And you're saying to suggest to get an outside consultation?
Well, I think it should be across the board. Let's put, I mean, look.
And believe me, I'm asking because I want to be able to provide a good carry-out order and maybe suggest it to bishops.
As I think about this unfolding, you know, how this situation, an abuse scenario may go,
mm-hmm.
I think about, funny enough, I think about the movie Full Metal Jacket. Have you ever seen that movie?
Dude, I did, but I mean, you're so old now. That was an old movie,
it's
wasn't
an old movie.
It?
It's kind of classic, so it serves a
I can't remember it, to be honest. I can tell you about The Breakfast Club.
So it's a movie about Vietnam. Came out in the 80s. Most people have seen it. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Kind of intense. The parallel I'm trying to make here is the movie starts out by guys going to boot camp, right? And as they go through boot camp, they start to understand the game. They understand that the one guy who's lagging and making them all pay because he can't keep up, they get sick and tired of it because they're all paying for his screw up.
Mm-hmm.
One night, they just do the towel party on him. They hold him down in his bed and they put a bar of soap and a towel.
And they
towel
just beat the heaven
beat
out of
the
him.
Crap out of him, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Because they're sick and tired of this guy and the problem he's causing for the whole unit. Because they can't execute their mission with this guy in their midst. So he's either got to shape up or ship out kind of thing, right?
Pretty much.
So how is it that in a diocese, the fellow priests don't see this guy and not understand there's something wrong with this dude and just throw the towel party in that guy, get rid of him? Why can't they identify this guy in seminary and recognize, because they're living with these guys, you guys are living together, right? You're living in the dorms or whatever the case may be. You're living in some close enough that you're getting to know each other pretty well. Are you telling me that you can't figure out that the guy to your left, your right is a child predator?
We are going to talk about that when we return with Joseph, my special guest here on Shoot the Shiitake. And in just a moment, we're going to actually get even deeper because as you can hear, ladies and gentlemen, the problem is bigger than we even think. And it's deeper than we think. And wouldn't it be wonderful because I could take a soap bar and a towel and just beat the crap out of somebody, which is kind of what we want to do. But maybe we'll just beat each other up with questions when we return for more Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, back in just a moment. A lot of people ask me about yoga and is it okay for Catholics to do? Well, it's definitely got some issues and some problems, so guess what? SoulCore.com has a solution. It's a movement, an exercise that strengthens the core, gives you great stretching and functional movement, all with praying the rosary. It's a sensory experience combining candlelight music, scripture, and movement to nourish the body, mind, and soul, and to encourage deeper reflection on the virtue of the rosary. You see, SoulCore is not affiliated with any other exercise or discipline. It's not yoga or possess Sanskrit references at any time. It's simply an invitation to discover the beauty of the rosary, a gentle path to grow in virtue and interior peace, and to get healthy body, mind, and soul. For more information, go to soulcore.com. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, and my special guest, codename Joseph. It's his confirmation name because we want to try to keep this confidential. And more importantly, it gives him the freedom to just ask anything he wants. In that little short break, I asked how he was feeling, and he said, what?
I feel good. I feel a lot of adrenaline going through my blood right now.
Yeah, I can tell. But at the same time, what did you feel?
A little bit nervous.
Nervous. And is it because you've got a microphone in front of your face, or what do you think?
It could be that. Maybe it's just a lot of things coming through my mind at once.
Yeah, and it's hard. When you wrote your email to me, I was, first of all, moved by it. Believe me, it was one of many emails that I received on this topic. But I also heard someone who was just striving for something. Like you were trying to find vocabulary to say something. And one of the big struggles, even just in this conversation, is this problem, to root out the problem. I mean, honestly, do you want me to take my brother priest and then literally just beat the crap out of him? Because I'll tell you, let me set this up for you.
Sure.
My very first assignment ever as a seminarian was at a parish with a priest who had been accused of child abuse. And he, please, I'm not defending his actions.
Mm-hmm.
He was the sweetest, most gentle man. You could tell that there was something slightly off, mm-hmm. but I think that might have been because of the medication they were just literally pumping into his system. I was not repulsed by him. I was a new seminarian, for goodness sakes. My very first assignment ever. And I remember that I went into the sacristy one day and he was celebrating Mass privately in the sacristy because he was not permitted to say public Mass anywhere. And I was moved by that. There was a compassion. There was a charity. There was no anger because, in fact, I didn't know who he abused. Later did I actually meet one of the victims, and it was shocking to experience that. So, but I lived with him, and you would ask the question, can you tell? Can you tell if a guy is a child abuser? Technically, no. I mean, it's not that easy. I can tell if someone's creepy and weird and they just give me the heebie-jeebies.
Right.
But hell, there's a lot of people who do that, you know? I mean, like, what do? Just start pointing fingers and just making false accusations? Because people could do that to me.
Does the church offer education on that sort of thing?
On what do you mean? Like how to spot an abuser?
Sure.
Oh my gosh. Every year, almost, we have to take like these online courses and answer these questions.
And that's great for us to know.
Yeah.
It really is. Because sitting from where I'm sitting, we don't see that. We don't know what you're getting educated on, what you're not. And it makes it look like the church is very complacent and complicit with this.
Well,
am I advocating for you to beat the snot out of a fellow priest? I'm not saying that. I understand a lot of people who are abusers were victims themselves.
Yeah.
And so you have compassion for that person. But at the same time, that compassion that I would feel as a father.
Sure. What really makes you mad is the response of bishops who seem phlegmatic, who seem kind of like wet rags, kind of trying to deal with this problem.
Yeah. Look, the church is not overburdened with testosterone filled priests who just are ready to like just kick ass when it comes time to like deal with this. It's kind of like, oh, let's just pray about it and we'll come together.
I know there's a lot of sissies in the Catholic Church when it comes to priests. I mean, like they don't like confrontation.
Right. So
they got to be peacemakers. And so a lot of them are afraid to make executive decisions. That's why, my gosh, some
and that's what scares me for the church, because you'll find other churches, whether they're on the mark or not, it's a different argument. You'll find other churches who will talk a better game than the Catholic Church is talking now.
So give me an example of that.
On other churches and how
because you say that there are other churches that would handle it better than we would.
Well, I'll say this. For a lot of the reasons that I love the Catholic Church are some of the weaknesses that the Catholic Church has, which is that it's centralized, right? So it's harder for, I think, an individual parish to come out and just go up there on a Sunday and give a homily and just be kicking things over and going crazy and saying, this is what we're going to do from now on. This has never happened in this church, mm-hmm. not in this house kind mm-hmm. of thing. If you're a pastor of an unaffiliated church, you can do that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And you can make it clear, things can take on your personal culture. I don't know that the Catholic Church has the latitude to do that or not, because I've never heard in all these, let's say since 2002, I haven't heard any priest in any parish come out and say anything strong, anything that's inspired me since this has happened, who said, look, this is a problem and this is how we're dealing with it. They've never passed that message. And I go to church every Sunday with a few exceptions.
Do you think it's appropriate for that to be done at a homily?
Perhaps.
Okay.
I agree with your assessment in your earlier podcast where you said you could open up more problems and you could solve.
Yeah.
Right? Because you've got,
I mean, you've got
38 minutes, right?
Wide range of ages there. And so appropriate language has to be justified to talk about it. And also,
the homily's not the right place, but something other something's than silence. Gotta be, because
yeah.
the silence has gotten deafening. And that's where you're just losing people, because it's just been, let's pray about it. Let's have forgiveness. Let's make sure this never happens again. We missed it.
But okay, and I think that's going to be something that I'm going to ask you about here. Do you think that we are ever going to weed out sexual abuse in the Catholic Church?
No, but you can make it, the perception is, and Catholics would love to be convinced otherwise, the perception is that it's accepted when the response is things like, hey, look, this doesn't happen any more often in the Catholic Church than it does in the rest of society.
Well, listen, though. I mean, listen. in some circles, remember, there was like a pedophile ring. There was literally priests who were...
Mm-hmm.
Part of this cluster,
right.
A complete screwed up cluster. I could use other words, but and I think all
and that's
of those
an example
priests
of how does
were,
that not go unnoticed? How do these guys find each other?
And that's just,
and how do they,
dude? But like you're in an agency that can literally find these people, and they're still out there. What is up? This is a real problem, and I would love desperately to root it out. But is it as easy as just saying I think that you're a child abuser because you're out there playing with the kids a little too much on the playground?
No, but that's, I think, oversimplifying it. I think it's, again, I'm struggling between my lack of the knowledge of being a part of the clergy.
Yeah, well,
and
I
what
can,
I'm
I'll
just
can tell perceive, you anything. I'll tell you anything.
What I can perceive from the communication that I'm getting. So, again, if I went to church once a year or twice a year, Christmas and Easter, and said, hey, I'm not hearing what I should be hearing, but I'm there every Sunday.
You're there every
much.
Sunday.
I've
exactly.
been there my whole life,
mm-hmm.
right? And these things have been happening, as far as I know, my whole life.
Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to root it out, too.
Why haven't I heard anything that tells me they're done with this and they're making sure that no one else comes in and this is a priority? Again, I'll go with a secular organization, you know, CIA, for example. They find a spy in their midst. That mm-hmm. spy is talked about for years, for decades, and it's held up as we can never let this happen again. And things are changed to make sure that that doesn't happen again. And protocols are put into place. And there's a culture that's built around making sure if you see something, you say something, it gets dealt with and so forth. Right.
Yeah, and
I'm
I'll,
not in the CIA, but that we can all know that from.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, but they've got their share of problems, too. And
sure.
there's a culture of corruption there.
Of course.
And how do we weed that out, especially after hundreds of years of dealing with Secret Service and espionage and all that kind of
but
stuff.
But it comes also from the lower ranks as well. Doesn't we don't have to depend on the politicians of that organization to get it done for us.
Well, I think what you've just done is outline that one of the problems is that this is a problem not just for the bishops, but for every person in the pew.
Absolutely.
And every priest who is sitting in a presider's chair. And every one of those people, like, dude, how many priests have I invited to come and talk about this as a brother priest, and only one so far was willing to do it?
Right.
I mean, they're literally just so scared right now.
So what is it about the organization of the Catholic Church that makes it so difficult?
Because to talk about these things?
Particularly when you have an organization that swear, as part of just getting in, you have to take a vow of obedience, right?
Yeah, of course.
From the pews, it looks like the bishop should be able to go in there and say, look, this is we're done with this. And if I...
The problems are, like, You're asking about human temperament. Why can't every priest grow a pair
right.
and talk about it?
Right.
Well, why can't every human do the same thing?
Well,
you know,
certainly.
I mean, it's like, good Lord.
Certainly, but by design.
Yeah. The Catholic Church's priests should be better prepared for it.
But also by design, the predators are singling out those in the pack
that don't
have the support to do that. Maybe they're, you know, they're in it from an alcoholic family.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, like, that's a mystery to me. Like,
I know that anecdotally. I don't know that.
I mean, I don't even know myself. Like, how does one become a predator?
Right.
You know, I guess I got to watch a Netflix series or something like that to figure that kind of psychological thing. And I can tell you that we have gotten rid of several seminarians in the midst of their formation
mm-hmm.
just because they demonstrated these really screwed up, creepy tendencies.
Right.
Maybe not heterosexual or homosexual or against child, but just creepy individuals. There are some creepy-ass mofos out in this church and in
sure.
this world, and they want to enter into it to screw it up from within. And I think
right.
one of the big struggles is that we're not fraternal enough to correct people. We kind of, I mean, like, how often would you be able to correct a colleague? And that's not an easy thing to do. I'm sure there's protocol and rank.
It depends on the organization,
yep.
right? Because if you're, again, in the military, right, a lot of those problems are policed out by the grunts of that organization, right?
Correct.
People, they take care of their own. They sort themselves out. It's not a great culture that works everywhere, but it's a culture that does sort out its own problems to lower ranks. For better or worse, you're going to potentially, you're going to be less inclined to be an outlier.
Yeah. I can tell you that the structures that have been put in, and so I'll just kind of review them. Before anyone even can volunteer, they go through fingerprinting and they go through some sort of like training, even just to volunteer in the Catholic Church, to go through priesthood or consecrated life. It is a massive dossier of accountability documents that are required, and, you know, from outside agencies, police forces, and, you know, fingerprinting, and then psychological examinations, and then a whole panel of people that kind of interview you. Have there been people who have been able to make it
through? When did that start, to your knowledge?
Well, I was doing it in the early 90s. And then as soon as I became a seminarian, there was a big meeting we all had about the sex abuse scandal, and it kind of just grossed me out. I'd never heard of this before. I mean, like, I knew that I've heard of it, but I never heard about it so close to home. You know, I mean, gratefully, I don't think I was abused. You know, like, I'm trying to go back into my memory. And and just to see that the first time I heard about it, I was shocked that we would even be talking about something like this. I mean, like, the whole psychosis of child abuse is kind of systematically new, you know, looked at systematically in a new fashion. I mean, we knew that rape's been going on in Hollywood forever, but just in 2018, the whole hashtag MeToo movement has given it a whole new momentum. So to weed out the problem, which is what we've been talking about, I think we would have to literally be in heaven to be problem-free. We'd have to be dead and on the right side of heaven. This is going to be a problem that we have for the rest of our lives. I hate to say it.
I don't know that that's true, and I don't say that.
I don't want it to be true.
I'm not disagreeing with you or agreeing with you. I just don't know. But I think what would be helpful is for people to understand the problem better, right? What is the profile of the person that does this?
Yep, I can tell you that.
What are they attracted to? What are they?
Absolutely.
Some people say there is no profile, right? Because it can be so across the board. It could be
we've had
military
dads.
General. It could be a
uber masculine football coaches.
Right.
And the number one, and again, I'm not defending in any way the priests who have committed this horrible, and I would even say satanically evil act.
I agree 100%.
They are evil, evil, evil acts. They're not necessarily evil men. I don't know. I don't know their entire life. You know, some of it might be a product of their own ridiculous brokenness. Who knows?
But that's where we go back to the handling of it. Because if you can't profile for the problem, you can only try and address it when you become aware of it. And that's where people are just out of their minds.
But remember that the number one set of abusers are fathers, dads. That's the number one group of child abusers.
Sure. Okay. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the Catholic Church. We're talking about systematic.
Oh, it was systematic abuse.
Systematic cover-up of the abuse. Systematic.
Yeah. But that, I mean, there's
and it's not just a matter of, well, let's just not deal with this. Let's just turn a blind eye. Let's just hope this goes away. It was legal actions taken to make sure that nothing was done, running out the clock.
Yeah, there was a friend of mine. I can't talk about his job either. He refuses to go on this show and talk about it. But part of his job is to review the tapes of child abuse, because if they don't review every second of it, it's inadmissible in court. I said, how the hell do you watch that and not literally just want to pull your eyeballs out and then just like bathe in boiling Purell? And he said, you just get numb. I'm like, and I think that's the problem. We have just part of the problem. We've become numb.
I think we've
and
I think
dumb.
I think the church has also just demonstrated some contempt for Catholics, though. Also, I think
What? The church? When you say the church, you're talking about like church leaders?
Yeah.
Priests have demonstrated a contempt for their congregation?
Correct.
Tell me about that.
Because really what I feel like the message is, when you've seen a lot of these cases, I mean, even as recently as I think it was a bishop in Australia who was accused of abuse, right? And I think it was the Pope who was saying, well, this is just really kind of a media smear campaign. Come on. I mean, when you're asking me to believe that the media is just out to smear the church, that may be true to some extent, but not to nearly to the extent that we know this is a problem. And if we're still going to default to that line of defense, hey, this is just a media smear camp, come on. You're asking me as a Catholic.
I mean, hold on a second. I mean, just but from truly a justice point of view, when has an accusation been an allegation actually been seen as reality?
I'm not trying to say we should be considering everyone guilty before, you know, have the chance to defend themselves.
Okay.
But if you're going to make a statement, don't
So give me a statement. Tell me what a statement should sound like.
If this is true, we'll make sure that this is dealt with, period. And we're going to conduct our own investigation to take this to the fullest extent it can be. No matter how long it takes, here's what we're going to put together on our team.
Okay, so in my in the podcast that you asked about, I said, I would never become a bishop, but if I could tell a bishop what to say, I would say, you have an accused priest. I would call a press conference and I would have him stand right next to me. And I would say, this man is accused of child abuse and we are going to step out of the way so that an independent, you know, review board will be able to investigate this and prosecute at the fullest extent of the law. However, while I will always allow justice to be served, I, as his bishop and spiritual father and priestly brother, will stand by him. I will pray with him. I will support him. I will always love him. And I will chastise him. I will hear his confession. I will give him a major penance, but I can't just abandon him.
No, I don't think people are looking for the leadership
to
be abandoned.
No, like with what I just said, how do you think people would take that? They would kill me. They would absolutely kill me.
Who's they?
The papal, the media. They would just say that bishop doesn't deserve to be in office if he's going to, quote unquote, be protecting.
Well, we're not serving the media here. We're talking about Catholics. We're not.
Yeah, but I mean, we still live in the world, and you know, I mean, they have a bigger voice than the Catholic Church does.
I think we're being compromised by the outside world at that point.
So that's part of the problem. I think the outside world has compromised the Catholic Church's teachings on human sexuality, and that is one of the reasons why. We can't be blaming just these priests. We have to be blaming the voices that are saying that sex outside of...
Well, everyone understands that. Everyone experiences that for themselves. So I don't think we're really addressing the problem when we ask everyone to kind of pray for the church because we're all experiencing this temptation. We get that. Nobody denies that. Nobody thinks that priests experience less temptation than the rest of us.
So if a bishop just simply said what you said... Full extent of the law, this person will be punished, the investigation will be done, that would make you happier.
Yeah.
But it has been said. That's the question. That's why I wanted to bring you on. It's like,
okay,
we have been saying it, but obviously it's not getting out there.
Well, I think it's being buried with a lot of other things. So yeah. For example, again, Pope Francis's letter to the people of God today. I mean, it was just kind of like, are you guys getting this? Or are we just going to have another homily that tells us that we're going to get through it?
And okay, and again, if you can just simply say it, what would you have wanted him to say? And I will continue to say what that should be.
I want to hear him say that this will not be stood for anymore, and I'm tasking my bishops to take care of their diocese, and if they're given, you know, I'm just...
Sure.
...making something up here, because I don't know exactly how the church itself, but I can say... Look, you've got 6 months to come clean. Anyone else to police your own. After that, we're sending our teams out like the Nazi hunters, and we're going to find these folks who've been a part of cover-ups, and we're turning you over to law enforcement.
Yeah,
we've reached a point where the church has to be proactive. We just have.
Yeah.
And we're still not seeing that. We're waiting for the Department of Justice or some state or local agency to find it for themselves, and then we're saying, well, you know, we should have got that one.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. This is a big issue.
It's not a priority.
I got to tell you though, it is. But if, I mean, you don't
but
see
how
it.
You have an entire state of Pennsylvania,
dude. This happened in the '60s. This happened in the '50s and the '60s. What agencies had situations to kind of police that then?
This was stuff that the DOJ pulled from the church's own records.
Yeah, believe me, I know. Catholics are the best record keepers ever.
Yeah. So why are these guys still wearing the collar at this point? Or
many of them are dead,
not disowned or disavowed or whatever the word may be.
Yeah, I mean, and I think like
because you saw that response since then, right? You saw them say, "Okay, we're taking their names off the buildings. We're doing this. We're doing that." These
sure.
guys are never.
Well, I think part
why
of
wasn't
it,
that done.
We didn't know.
Why did it take?
We just didn't know. And you're saying we should have known.
If they're pulling records from the church itself,
sure.
How
yeah.
did you not know?
Well, I think in part is because. What bishop goes into a diocese and looks at every record?
A bishop that's told to by the Pope. A bishop that's told to by the Pope that says, you find this out before the law enforcement does.
Okay.
Because we can't afford this anymore.
What we thought happened, and believe me, I'm not defending any of this. What was thought that was happened was that the 2002 report did just that. And they didn't do it thoroughly enough.
Well, 54 out of 67 counties in Pennsylvania apparently found stuff that the church didn't find.
Sure.
Okay, that's one state out of 50.
That's right. And I know that there's more. And so, literally, it's just going to hit the fan. And so...
So why isn't the Pope saying, you know what, safety stand down. We're going to take care of this ourselves. Look, call off Sunday Mass because all your time is going to be spent going through records and finding out who these people are, and we're dealing with it ourselves.
And now that sounds ridiculous.
It does sound ridiculous. I mean, but just, I mean, well, look.
On that note, I've got to bring this part of the conversation to a close. I was looking... Joseph, codename Joseph here. I was looking for you to tell me something that could really be helpful. And everything that you said is helpful, but we've done it.
Got it.
And it, but it hasn't gotten to you.
Right.
You don't believe that it's happened and it's not done well enough. But that's why we're going to continue this ongoing conversation. For all of our premium subscribers, Joseph and I are going to continue this conversation. And we're really just going to hammer it all out because I'm so sick of this problem myself. I want to get rid of it. But I don't know how. And that is, as helpful as this conversation, Joseph, has been, it's also not been as helpful. But at the same time, I hope it has been for you, so you at least know that a priest is willing to listen.
That is helpful, actually.
I mean, just to listen, because this is hurting everybody, and it breaks my heart. I want to get rid of this, and that is why when I return for my carryout order, I'm going to try to summarize maybe some things that were trying to be said. And then, of course, for premium subscribers, Joseph and I are going to continue this conversation for a deeper dish discussion, learning from leftovers. But I'll be back with more carryout order stuff in just a moment. While the summer vacation season may be over, it's now time to look ahead and to prepare for how you're going to grow in your faith by coming with me on one of my pilgrimages, whether it be to southern Italy or to Croatia or to the Holy Land or on a special food and faith tour in Europe somewhere. You can definitely learn all about my pilgrimage experiences by visiting me at fatherleofeeds.com/travel or calling Select International, one of our great proud sponsors, at 800-842-4842. That again is selectinternationaltours.com by calling 800-842-4842 or visit me at fatherleofeeds.com/travel. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for the deeper dish discussion. And I'm just so grateful to my guest, codename Joe, and I certainly appreciate him willing to be anonymous as we kind of talked very honestly about the problems regarding the Catholic Church's handling basically feckless administration of trying to eradicate child abuse in the Catholic Church. One of the big challenges that besides the PR and the real inability of the Catholic Church to communicate what it is doing and what it has done since the 2002 John Jay report and the Dallas Charter, it is really not an easy thing to become a priest, much less a volunteer. You know, you got to go through background check, you have to provide testimonies, you have to do fingerprinting, and for priests, even more testing to make sure that we try to weed out deviant future behavior, especially when it comes to potential child abuse villains, perpetrators. Is this possible to do? No. If it were the case, we wouldn't have child abuse at all anymore. But guess what? It still happens in this world. And I hate it, and I find it disgusting, and I want to get rid of it. It is truly, as all of the popes have said, absolute filth. Absolute disgusting filth. And what my special guest, codename Joe, what he was trying to communicate is just what I think a lot of people are going through right now. They're just angry. They are pissed off. They're disgusted by, first of all, the sinful criminal behavior, but then they're also just disgusted by how kind of useless bishops have been in trying to deal with it. I mean, even now, there is a new set of problems that we're reading about in the church's news. The Diocese of Lincoln in Nebraska are going through basically toilet time because their former bishop, Bishop Bruskowitz, chose not to have a lay board oversee the child protection policies in his diocese. And there were several credible allegations against certain priests. Many of them are in their older age, you know. So these things happened way back in the day and perhaps even prior to any statute of limitation. So
it's just seemingly a nonstop problem. And boy, people are angry. But here's the big but. If we are going to try to find a solution, we have to put our anger in the right place. Let's make sure that we're not angry at certainly the church trying to do the right thing. Whether they can do it perfectly or not is another story. But let's get angry at the fact that our world continues to promote sexual activity without responsibility. I was reading in a CARA report, a survey report by CARA, that a lot of the priests who were abusers grew up in a unique time, you know, and ordained in the 50s, 60s, quote unquote, 70s. They also were formed in the priesthood in a time when the world was going through a real confused time with sexual revolution. That is the sex without responsibility. You don't even have to have love in order to have it. And you could just do whatever you want with whomever you want. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen now, but it sure is. I don't even know what the percentage is, but it's certainly nowhere near what we've experienced of abusing priests from that generation. So could this be a generational problem? It is certainly worth looking at. Is it a homosexual problem, which a lot of people will think is the problem? I am not there yet. I know that that is a problem, but we're confusing it because the fact is there have been a lot of abuse cases against young girls, children of the quote-unquote opposite sex. They don't even need to be talking about that stuff at that age, but we just know that by saying that it's a homosexual problem, it diminishes the pain that young girls have experienced from the abuse of perpetrating priests, abusing priests. So I just think that we have to put anger aside for right now and to try to get a balanced understanding of how to approach these solutions. And one of the things that I've come across, including with my special guest, Joe, codename, was that he couldn't even articulate the problems necessarily. Because when I said, you know, how would you as a bishop respond to this? He gave an answer and I basically said, well, that's what the bishops generally say now. I mean, that's just kind of what they say. Then they say, well, you should have things in place where you kind of prevent this from happening and even doing some profiling of future priests and making sure that they're not going to become perpetrators. Well, we kind of have that now. And so that's kind of already there. Is it done perfectly? Now, that might be the problem. No, it's not done perfectly. Because the last time I checked, the church is made up of a bunch of ridiculously broken and flawed humans. And so while we want to try to even find solutions, we have to articulate the problem and to try to find the vocabulary to speak about what the problems are, anger-free. I mean, when my special guest was talking about how he's sick and tired of hearing the church's leaders responding to this crisis by simply saying, we're crying with you, we're praying with you, and we're trying to you know, do what we can to move forward. Well, what else could they say at that point? Do you want them just to like sit at the pulpit and just start dropping the F-bomb and screaming at people? Or do we want to find these priests who are abusers and just beat the living snot out of them? Is that the solution? For some people that might be, yeah. But I don't think that's going to solve the problem. Why? Because this is a problem even bigger than the outreach of the Catholic Church. If there was a way to solve this, I would honestly think that it could be solved when everyone in this world comes together to try to fight against it. But if you're going to try to rely on an institution to solve this problem, guess what? That's where things are going to be flawed, which is why I don't place my faith in the institutional church. I place my faith in Jesus Christ, who can even work through all of the brokenness of the people in the institution of the church, and I hope that that makes sense. You know, we were talking about accountability and how the church might be outside of the accountability, and I would honestly have to say that he raises a very good point, but the only people right now who are seemingly without accountability are the bishops. And so while I love the bishops and I love the superiors and I certainly love the people who are entrusted with an apostolic leadership role in the Catholic Church, there needs to be more accountability for them, which is why I'm grateful that the current president of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, Cardinal DiNardo, has asked to create some policies and to make sure that there is going to be an independent overseer to look at the policy so that if there is an allegation against the bishop, it will be dealt with as swiftly as it is for a priest, which is pretty swift these days. Was it that way? Admittedly, no. Admittedly, there have always been problems. And so I just think that one of the things that we have to do is to make sure that these accountability procedures are not only in place, overseen by an independent review board. And yeah, I would have no trouble if some of those people in the review board just absolutely hate Catholics. Why? Because then we know that we are not simply hiring just a bunch of professional consultants who are just going to, you know, be yes men and just kiss the bishop's butts in order to keep their job. You know, I mean, I think we need prophets. And there is a passage in the Old Testament where King David is kind of trying to get from one town to another. And there is this crazy man who actually hates King David so much because he's kind of aware of what King David did when he took over Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah. And you remember this story? Total, absolute disgusting scandal where King David sent Uriah out on a no-win mission after getting him drunk just so that he would be at his weakest in order to have him basically die in battle so that King David can take over Uriah. And as King David is moving with his troops from one city to another, there's this man named Shimei, and who's constantly throwing stones at King David, just literally just throwing stones and hurling insults and basically saying, you're a scoundrel, you're a fake, you're a fraud. And King David's army says, you want me to go over there and kill him? And King David says, no, not at all, because this man is basically keeping me humble. This man is basically in place because God has put this person here to kind of help me to deal with my own brokenness and help me to deal with my own sins. And that's why I think this independent review board made up of people who not only care for the church and people who don't care for the church should be a part of it. And if they're doing their job, then they create the policies that will truly be not only fair and judicious, but this could be applied not just for the Catholic Church, but for every institution on the face of this planet. Why? Because I do think that the church has made great efforts to try to eradicate this problem. And I'm not confusing the issues. Again, I'm trying to keep the child abuse as one issue. The other issues of unfaithful priests with women and with men, that's another problem. You know, is it criminal activity? Technically, no, especially if they're two consenting adults. Technically, no. Is it appropriate and proper? No, God, no. It's definitely sinful. But it's not criminal activity. So as angry as people want to get about that, let that be a separate discussion. So I kind of want to take away the Archbishop Vigano dossier out of this conversation and just deal specifically with the child abuse crisis and the criminal activity of sinfulness. There needs to be some sort of true, independent, combined with lay as well as clergy, as well as people who are supportive of the Catholic Church and people who are critical of the Catholic Church. You people create the policies and let that be a benchmark for all other institutions. And here's my hope that it will work, but here's my realistic expectation. While there might be a perfect policy in place, will people follow it perfectly? Probably not. Which is why, again, if you really want to find a solution to this problem, we have to fix the institution, but above all, have faith in the one who made that institution, Jesus. And I'm sure you all remember that Jesus picked a man who denied him three times as the first pope. That'd be St. Peter. Flawed. And that's why I think that while we all want to find a solution to this problem, we have to realize that part of the solution is going to be in how we handle the process. Getting angry and being disgusted. That's just normal human reactions. And I'm grateful to my guest who was able to kind of share that with me. But part of the process was to try to communicate with him about what the problems are. And we can't articulate those problems, much less use proper vocabulary. And you know, there's not a one-size-fits-all kind of solution. And going Full Metal Jacket and beating the crap out of someone with, you know, soap and a towel, that's not going to be a solution either. What's going to be a solution is when we, again, try to everyone, not just Catholics, but everyone in this world takes sexual activity more seriously and with a more sacred approach. When we as a world, every individual in the world starts to approach the sexuality with a holy fear, then that will lead to a developing of a righteousness in the policy to protect children. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is my carry-out order. I know that I probably raised more questions than solutions, but you know what? That's a great thing, because the more that we're willing to question, the more we're willing to find the answers. And it's not going to be easy to do, but I believe that with this show and this movement and with your support, we can definitely do that. So I hope you got something out of the show. Again, thanks to my special guest, Codename Joe, for willing to join me on this show. And if you have any questions about this, don't hesitate to email me at fatherleo@fatherleofeeds.com or visit the new Shoot the Shiitake website. That's Shoot the Shiitake with two I's in shiitake.com website. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry. And we hope you enjoyed this episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. And thanks to our sponsor, BrandFox, where fulfillment, customer service, and e-commerce comes together perfectly to fulfill your online orders. That is BrandFoxLLC.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, we ask you to please subscribe to any of your favorite podcast platforms, to share this podcast with other family, friends, and fellow faithful foodies and parishioners, and also support us with a donation of $10 or more each month. We can have conversations that lead to conversions and to get rid of all the bullshiitake when we're willing to shoot the shiitake. To get more information on how you can partner with us as a sponsor or as an advertiser, just go to shoottheshiitake.com or visit me at fatherleofeeds.com/listen.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.